So again, good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. I wanted to continue with where we were last week because I think it is so important. For those of you who were on last week, our Sunday Sangha also was the same as the final day of our retreat that was on the cultivation of patience and acceptance. And so I did a little summary last week of sort of the key points of the retreat and invited three participants to just spontaneously share their experience over the 3 days. And for those you remember, and I won't go into it too much because I believe these things get posted within a few days of the talk. We based it on the patience chapter of Shantideva's The Way of the Bodhisattva, in which he makes very clear that the antidote to anger is understanding. The understanding of what? The understanding of causes and conditions. And then when one understands that whatever is arising that's making you angry is simply the product of causes and conditions, immediately that brings acceptance and what we consider patience, or we might say equanimity in the face of the ups and downs of life. But the other emphasis a lot of the retreat was getting people to stop thinking that anger is just that hot burning flame that erupts now and then. It has a low level, which is annoyance, impatience, frustration, which for many people is more chronic. And it is the same as anger. It is a separation from life, not understanding that things are causes and conditions. And we're just basically, if we're impatient, annoyed, or whatever, it's because we are basically angry with what's unfolding, even though it's lower level. But, you know, a fire is a fire. Even if it's just a little tiny fire, whether it's a forest fire, the forest fire does more damage, but they are the same. Fire is fire. Now, one might say, well, okay, that was a good talk last week, very helpful. Why does Fred want to talk about it again another week? Well, because I have a sneaking suspicion that everybody who was on the call last week, including those who are on retreat, are not there yet. And so therefore, we have to understand, and we'll get into it today, that transformation is deeper than the intellectual understanding. So, and because, again, as was said last week and during retreat, because anger is so destructive, it's so destructive of our own inner harmony and well-being, it's destructive of our own practice and our cultivation of wholesome mind states, it is so destructive in relationships, and even most importantly, it is so destructive of in the world, as we see going on right now. It is something that we really need to pay very close attention to understand its roots, and most importantly, to become dedicated to uprooting it in ourselves. Yesterday, we had a half-day retreat online dealing with two of the 14 trainings, the mindfulness trainings of the Order of trainings dealing with non-attachment to views, and the training dealing with being with suffering. I was fortunate to be able to participate in it somewhat. And so it struck me a good way to continue today our discussion on anger would be to look at the specific training. There is a specific training in the 14 dealing with anger. And what I want to do is present three iterations, if we have time. If not, we can continue next week. Three iterations of it in the development of the way Thich Nhat Hanh looked at it. And in time, I think it wasn't him anymore, but it was a committee of of his students who were kind of doing the new version. So there are at least four new versions that I'm aware of, or four versions. I'll just kind of get to the original three if we're lucky today. So again, the order of interbeing, I think, has been explained many times. And for those who don't know about it, this order that was founded by Thich Nhat Hanh in the 60s and the 14 trainings or precepts of the order, please go online, or you can, there's a new version of the book Interbeing that's out, which has commentaries on each of the 14 and on the charter and some of the history. It's good. So in the original iteration as translated into English, going back to the, that was published in first edition of Interbeing in 1987, and they're actually, I have earlier ones than that, but we'll just use this one. This was sort of the first public one. They were still called precepts then. So the precept said, do not maintain anger or hatred. As soon as anger and hatred arise, practice the meditation on compassion in order to deeply understand the persons who have caused anger and hatred. Learn to look at other beings with the eyes of compassion. So this is very interesting, sort of how this is, and we'll see, because we'll see how it changed over time. And it's important that we, you know, I run into many people over the years in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition who think that the way they deal with their afflictive emotions is, you know, and Thay has said this, hello, my old friend. And they kind of hold them and nurture them and they take care of them. And they think that's the practice he taught. I mean, he did say those things as an initial contact. But anyway, we'll talk about that. So here we are, 1987. Do not maintain anger and hatred. Very clear. Now, he didn't say that anger or hatred won't arise. Right? He didn't say suppress, repress anger and hatred. He said, do not maintain it. So this is the first thing we understand. We didn't understand. Thich Nhat Hanh understands how dangerous anger is. He also understands how, you know, how is we, many of us have seeds of anger within us. So his first admonition is, do not maintain it when it has arisen. Maintain has to do with time. Do not maintain it over time. How long a time? Well, maybe you want to give yourself 5 minutes. Is that enough time to really enjoy your anger and your feeling of safe righteousness? You know, how long do we need to maintain it? An hour? 2 hours? For the day, for the week, for the month, for the year, for the years. I mean, some people are maintaining angers from decades. And yet, if you're doing that, you're not practicing Dharma, as taught by the Buddhas and the masters. I don't say that to fault anybody, but we need to understand there are teachings to guide us, to help us. And we need to do our best to practice it. So the first thing it says is do not maintain anger or hatred. Okay? And we can talk about this. And then he says, as soon as anger and hatred arise, okay? It's not repression or suppression. It's not awareness. As soon as it arise, practice the meditation on compassion in order to deeply understand the persons who have caused anger and hatred. So in this formulation, he's saying the antidote, or what to do when anger or hatred arise, is practice compassion, the meditation on compassion, for whomever it is that you are angry at. Now, compassion means an acknowledgement that the person is suffering. That's the first thing. It's empathy. It's understanding whoever it is, whomever it is, whatever they've done or haven't done, they are suffering. And understanding the person is understanding what they're suffering from. It's a willingness to get out of yourself. Right? And we know when we're angry, we don't want to get out of ourselves because we're very strongly in ourselves, very strong, very right, very angry. Right? So the last thing we want to do is get out of ourselves and understand another human being. But this is the practice. Practice the meditation on compassion in order to look deeply into the person so we can understand them. This is the practice, which is the same exact thing that Shanti Davis says, right? When we understand the causes and conditions that have created the person, the situation, then there's acceptance and there's understanding. Right? And then compassion becomes possible. And the third sentence is, learn to look at other beings with the eyes of compassion. Learn means what? It's something we need to practice. This is what we're doing. As followers of the Buddha's way, as followers of Thich Nhat Hanh's way, we are supposed to be learning to look at living beings with the eyes of compassion. The eyes of compassion see the world and the problems of the world caused by people who are suffering. And not only are they unaware that they're suffering, but they take their suffering out on other people and cause them suffering. And when we look on this world, you know, we touch the suffering. But in Buddhism, compassion means we want to help. We want to do something. We don't stay stuck. You know, many people are stuck. They think they're compassionate, but they're really just stuck in empathy. It's like, I feel your suffering, or I feel my own suffering. I feel your suffering. I feel my own suffering. And they get stuck there, just like they get stuck in their anger or hatred. For minutes, hours, days, you know, decades. Compassion means we want to do something to alleviate the suffering if we can. If we can't, then we leave it alone, and leave it alone in understanding. I mean, we don't just leave it alone as an affliction to rot. We leave it alone because we understand, even though we know people are hurting, there is really nothing we can do at this moment. So we have to accept that this is the way things are. So, again, in this publication from 1987, the first time these were published, do not maintain anger or hatred. As soon as anger and hatred arise, practice the meditation on compassion in order to deeply understand the persons who have caused anger and hatred. Learn to look at other beings with the eyes of compassion. So just in these three sentences, I think we have enough to keep us busy for a lifetime. Sometimes, again, my only problem with the reformulations over time is they've gotten longer and a little more dense. I mean, it's all good stuff, but sometimes we just need the very simple pith teachings. Do not maintain, there it is, do not maintain it. That's our practice. As soon as it arises, do something with it. Here it says, practice compassion, practice understanding, look deeply into the person. And what's our general everyday practice? Learn to look at beings with the eyes of compassion. If we over time learn more and more to look at beings with the eyes of compassion, we won't be angry with them all the time, frustrated with them, impatient with them, annoyed by them. Anytime we go into those mind states, it's only because we're not looking with the eyes of compassion. Is that true? I don't care how often in our formal meditation we do loving kindness meditation. You know, it's gotta be real. It has to be real time if it has any meaning. So as we go about our world, as we go about our day, as we see people, all kinds of people, you could ask yourself, do you look at everybody with the eyes of compassion and understanding? That's our practice. That's our daily practice. If you know, I'll be taking questions, but the number of people, I'm going to ask people to chat them in. So Bill, you'll just kind of hold on to them and I'll continue on a little bit and then we'll take questions a little down the line, maybe after the second formulation. So if anybody has any questions just about what's been shared so far, please chat them into Bill and Bill will take note of them. Then in 1991, I'm reading from the Plum Village Chanting Book. This is a very well-worn book. They were still called precepts. So now it's still called the Sixth Precept. 1991, this is 4 years after, 4 years? 4 years after this other one was published. The sixth precept begins the same way. Do not maintain anger and hatred. Please take note of that. They didn't change that. Do not maintain anger and hatred. This is like a commitment, you see. This is like a vow. How many of us who have problems around anger, impatience, frustration, even hatred and rage, how many of us who know that we have that problem have made the vow, I will no longer maintain anger or hatred. I'm committed to that. Please ask yourself, have you ever made that vow? And do you retake it every morning if it's still a problem? Just take a moment. If you want to substitute impatience, frustration, annoyance, have we maybe consciously made the intention, the vow, the commitment, no longer to maintain these poisonous type of emotions? They poison the well of goodness in our hearts and minds. So then the second sentence says, now it begins to change. Learn to penetrate and transform them when they are still seeds in your consciousness. So this is very interesting. And again, this is really based on an understanding of Buddhist psychology, especially Yogacara psychology, which is something over the years we have taught here in classes and workshops. And I hope to do it again in the fall, because I think it's so important that people understand Buddhism has its own psychology of the mind, which has a very much to do with how we go about transforming the mind, which is very different than, not very different, but somewhat different in significant ways than Western psychology. Learn to penetrate and transform them when they are still seeds in your consciousness. Thich Nhat Hanh, the title has changed. He used to have a book on Yogacara, Vasubandhu, called Transformation at the Base. And this is the basis of Buddhist psychology, that at the base of our mind, the biggest part of our mind is what's called the storehouse consciousness, Sanskrit, the Alaya Vijnana. And that is the repository of everything we have thought and felt and acted. The seeds of all that are in this storehouse consciousness, as well as all our mental formation, we might say all our conditioning. It is the repository of our karma. This is what is really mostly, this is like 95% of our mind. Up at the top, there's this little conscious mind, you know, that's thinking. The other part is much bigger, much more powerful. And so our problem is most of the time we are trying to change ourselves up here. And we wonder why, you know, years and decades later, it's really not working in any significant way. So here he says, learn to penetrate and transform them when they are still seeds in your consciousness. So Buddhist psychology says that, you know, anything we feel or experience is because we have the seeds in us. We get angry, we get scared, we love, we hate, we're indifferent, we feel compassionate, because we have those seeds of all those various wholesome and unwholesome, virtuous and unvirtuous mind state in our storehouse consciousness. We don't have to wait till they arise. We can penetrate and transform them when they're still seeds, right? We can look deeply into our mind and we know that we have seeds of anger. Seeds of, well, we'll just keep it to anger, right? And we can kind of bring them up in our meditation, and we can work to transform them, to heal them, to hold them in mindfulness. And most importantly, we can perfume them with other seeds. Seeds of understanding, seeds of acceptance, seeds of love. We have those seeds too. And when we perfume those other seeds, those afflictive seeds, they begin to change. In the same way, when we are cultivating our afflictive seeds, they're perfuming our wholesome seeds. You know, that's why, like, we're in a full-blown anger, you know, understanding, compassion, kind speech is gone, because the anger is now perfuming our whole mind. So we need to learn to transform them when they are still seeds, when they're small, when they're just potentials. Right. Now, the more mindful we are, we can learn to kind of catch them when they just begin to kind of come up. So the seeds come up. We see something, somebody says something, and just a little reaction. A little thought, negative thought. Can't believe they said that. That's a seed. What do we do then? Do we penetrate it? Do we transform it? or do we let it blossom? He says, as soon as they arise, turn your attention. So he's giving us a way now. So, so we don't get swept away. As soon as they arise, and they will arise, turn your attention to your breath. So many of us have learned, but this is very important what he says next, because I think many of us have not learned the next part. So turn your attention to your breath, and many of us turn our attention to our breath as if that's the practice. The anger's arising, but I'll kind of try to hold on by being aware of my breath to calm me, to keep me from being swept away. As soon as they arise, turn your attention to your breath in order to see and understand the nature of your anger and hatred and the nature of the persons who have caused your anger and hatred. This second step, many people leave out. So they're endlessly calming their anger. They're endlessly, like on a horse, they're endlessly, I'm not a horse rider, but they're endlessly, I've seen movies, they're endlessly pulling back on the reins, right? Hold that horse back. Hold that anger back. Hold that, back before I say something, Right? We're kind of holding it back. Right? Using our breath to hold it back. That's only step one. We're turning our attention to our breath to stabilize us in order to see and understand the nature of our anger and our hatred. Oh, that's interesting. Because when we're angry, the last thing we want to do is look into the nature of our anger and hatred, right? We want to think about everything bad we can think about that other person, don't we? That's what we want to do when we're angry. But look into what is the nature of our own anger? Where is it arising from? And in the patience retreat, we talked about last week, it is always arising from self. Self is not happy that a person in the world is not doing what they want them to do. It's very simple. Self is not getting what it wants, it's getting what it doesn't want. Are we willing to stop and understand the nature of what's causing us to be angry? That we have the seeds of anger, they're arising, because we have those seeds, and because we have a strong ego and self that thinks the world and the people in it should operate according to my principles. Or else self thinks that all its needs should be met. Everything should always go its way. Right? We need to look into how self and egocentricity is causing the anger to arise. And, he says, and the nature of the persons who have caused your anger and hatred. So again, here we're talking about another variation, which is, it's sort of like what we talked about earlier. It's, am I willing to look into the nature of the person, who they are, the causes and conditions that have created them, but they're not doing this to spite me. They're not doing this to frustrate me. They're not doing this to get me angry. These are all things we think to ourselves. They're doing it because this is who they are. They're in their world with their causes and conditions, with their needs and wants. Most of the time it has nothing to do with us. Traffic has nothing to do with us. right? When the call center puts us on hold, it's not personal. They do it to everybody. But we make it personal. I can't believe this is happening to me. And again, I often say, you know, we don't care if it's happening to anybody else, but it should never happen to me. Why? Because I'm special. Everything in my world should work. And everybody should be there to what? To meet my needs. How wonderful if it was that way. That's the ego's ideal world. Do not maintain anger or hatred. Let's listen again. Do not maintain anger or hatred. Learn to penetrate and transform them when they are still seeds in your consciousness. As soon as they arise, turn your attention to your breath in order to see and understand the nature of your anger and hatred and the nature of the persons who have caused your anger and hatred. Again, this is practice. This is not what we do, is it? This is not what comes naturally to us. Right? What comes naturally to us is to, you know, is to be angry, to be impatient, to blame others, to see others as the cause of our problems. I mean, this is our default. It takes no energy to do what we do. But this takes energy, the energy of practice. This takes intention. This takes commitment. You know, this is not natural. At this point, this doesn't feel natural. What we're habituated to seems natural. But it's, I mean, unfortunately, we think it's natural. We think it's through the way we are, but it's not. It's only natural because this is what we've been doing for years, for decades. So it seems natural. It's easy for us. It's easy for us to be impatient. It's easy for us to be angry. It's hard for us to be patient. It's hard for us to be understanding. Why? Because we don't practice. The more we practice, the easier it'll get. As soon as they arrive, turn your attention to your breath in order to see and understand the nature of your anger and hatred and the nature of the persons who have caused your anger and hatred. See into their nature. So let me just stop a second before we move on to the third formulation. And Bill, are there any questions that get to the heart of the matter? And if anybody here in the hall has a
number of questions, beginning with a more general one, what is the difference between compassion and empathy?
Yeah, so this is very important. Again, the word compassion in Buddhism is karuna. Karuna means I want to alleviate the suffering of others. Okay? Empathy, the way I understand it, is that one feels the suffering of another. Now, is empathy an essential quality of human life? Yes. Obviously, people who don't have empathy, they lead painful lives and cause pains to others. So having empathy, which means, you know, a sense of connection and understanding of someone else's suffering or what they're going through is kind of essential for real compassion or action to take place. But in Buddhism, we don't get stuck in empathy. See, many people are stuck. They think they're compassionate, but they're just extreme empathics, which means they're always feeling the suffering of other people. But they're not really, but they're stuck there. And so they're stuck in suffering. Empathy is what connects. Compassion is what acts. And it has intelligence. It has heart. It has all the good qualities. It has skillfulness. That is compassion. Okay?
After we've looked with understanding, how do we know when we can change another person's suffering and when we cannot?
I'm sure there are lots of books about that. You could write a bestseller. Just say it to me one more time.
How do we know when we can change another person's suffering and when we cannot?
Okay, so the first thing is you will not be able to see clearly the nature of the other person until you are not clear yourself. So let us not skip over the work that's involved in really saying, I understand the nature of my anger. I have looked deeply into it. And in this moment, I am clear. I am clear, so in that space of clarity and openness, I can now really look at the other person, be present at the other person, to see their suffering, not through my own lens, you know, and when we, you know, and that's not easy. Most of us see other people through the filters of self and the filters and projections of our own stuff. So we have to clear it out, and now we can be present to another human being. So we can, you know, it's not that hard to figure people out when you're present to them. You just look and you can see people suffering. You listen to their words and you can hear their suffering. You talk to them about what's going on with them. And you learn about them. You talk to them about their past antecedents and their life, and you learn the causes and conditions. So now we've done enough, we have enough information that we can attempt to help another person end their own suffering. It takes skill. It takes a person who really wants to change. many people, the idea that they can do something about their own suffering is a new concept. Everybody wants to do something about their suffering, but most people, they take care of their suffering, you know, by consuming things, distracting themselves, consuming drugs, consuming alcohol, consuming TV, consuming food, consuming experience, we just consume. That's how we get rid of our suffering. Yeah, so just even to help somebody just begin to look deeply into their suffering. But they'll only do it in your presence if they know you're non-judgmental, if you really mean it. You really care about them. You want to listen to them. You want to learn from them. And you've modeled in your own life that you know how to take care of your own suffering and transform it. You know, a lot of what goes on out there in life is just the blind leading the blind, unfortunately. Right? So if whoever's ever asking the question is really committed to wanting to really help other people, look deeply into themselves, well, I think I've just said it, but you know, in Buddhism, when we understand ourselves, you understand everyone. You know, we're all variations on the themes, right? It's not really all that complicated. And once you have the wisdom and experience of transforming yourself, you will have, you know, very directly the wisdom and experience to be of help to others. Any other questions, Bill?
These teachings, I often think, yes, that's true. Other people should be more compassionate to me and understand my issues. And he kind of laughs. He says, any suggestions for how to keep the focus on my own transformation?
Well, I think whoever asked the question knows the answer to that one. That was said very true. You know, isn't that called the golden rule? I mean, that's kind of like most of us heard that since we were four, right? I mean, it's profound. I mean, do unto others as you want others to do unto you. Right, right, right. But we turn it around, you see. I mean, our golden rule is others should do to me the way I want them to. So I don't know if that's the golden rule. Maybe that's the fool's gold rule that many of us follow. Yeah, but that's wonderful. Yeah, I mean, again, you know, am I willing to take the first step? Am I willing to transform myself? You know, I mean, so many people, I'll change when you change. Right? When you start treating me more kindly, then I'll treat you more kindly. When you're more understanding to me, then I'll be more understanding to you. When you're more patient with me, then I'll be patient with you. That's not the way. Right? It has to begin with us. Peace begins with us. You know, if we want the world, if we want other people to be a certain way, then we need to manifest it. I mean, I think it's just the most bizarre thing that so many people demand that everybody else be loving and kind and sympathetic and compassionate and understanding, patient to them, when they're not willing to extend it to anybody else, especially people who don't do it their way. I mean, if you think about it, it is kind of, what would you call it? Strange, bizarre, delusive, that we demand of the world that what we won't offer the world. We need to offer it to the world. Yes. Anything else, Bill?
Myself that is almost constant.
Yes.
Any comments?
Yeah, good. So, you know, one of the things that we had 80 or 90 people in the retreat, and a lot of people came away with an awareness that they were much angrier than they thought they were going into the retreat. Sort of strange, you think you go into the retreat and you come out less angry, less irritated, but many people, I mean, they certainly had the tools, but I mean, it was a rude awakening to experience, and we took people through various kinds of exercises to help them really see it. Yeah, so it's the same, right? We're impatient with ourselves. Why? Because somehow we have some idea that whatever self we have, which means I guess all kinds of characteristics or attributes of ourself, is not the way we'd like ourself to be, right? So we're angry at ourself, we're irritated with ourself, we're impatient with ourself. We need to understand our own cause. It's the same thing. We need to accept and understand our own causes and conditions. And that should be the easiest thing for all of us. It's a little harder with other people because we have to look deeply into them and communicate with them to really deeply understand them. But for us, we've lived our life, right? I mean, you know, we've lived our childhood, we've lived our adolescence, we've lived it. You know, whoever asked me that question, you lived your life with the person you're irritated at. Is that clear? You know, you were there all along. And I think I always get a kick out of people who do these kinds of things. It's now like it's like one part has stepped away from the other part and go, I'm better than you. Right? Even though I was there while everything was going on, I'm better than you. And I'm irritated. I'm really angry that you are the way you are, as if somehow this other part of you isn't. Can you feel it's kind of like there are two people inside? One pointing the finger at the other part. Bad, bad, bad. Of course, because the other part thinks I'm good, good, good. So our practice, whether it's with other people, is understanding causes and conditions. When you look deeply into yourself, you will understand the cause and conditions of why you present in the moment as you are. You cannot be other than who you are in the moment. But if you have awareness and mindfulness and you practice, as it said, when that irritation at yourself arises, you can look deeply into that too and see how, you're impatient because you don't accept the causes and conditions of your life. You're impatient because you have some idea that life should be different for you, or you should be different. We're imposing these kind of made up ideas on reality. Reality is what is. We are who we are. And yet, as we learn through Dharma, we have the capacity of transformation. We have the capacity of healing. When does that go on? Now. if you listen to the last two precepts, it says, when anger arises, irritation, annoyance, do something. That's how we transform it. So I encourage everybody who has that kind of dualistic relationship with their self, good self, bad self, acceptable self, unacceptable self. It's like, there's got to be understanding and acceptance. Many people are like divided that way, like two selves, three selves, four selves. Ultimately, there's no self. But in a functional way, there's just me. Each of you is a me. And you have your various qualities. We all have our various seeds, our old mental formations, all that are the product of our past. We all are the inheritors of the actions of our body, speech, and mind. In the five remembrances, that's what it says, right? I am the inheritor of the actions of my body, speech, and mind. That's all we are. And we should accept and understand that that's what we are. And being irritated at the world, being irritated at the people in the world, being irritated with myself, my past, it's all the same delusion. Things are what they are. The past is what it was. People are who they were. People did or didn't do anything because of their causes and conditions. And now what? And now what? In the precept we read, it said, as soon as, immediately when, these things arise, do something. Don't maintain anger. If we're still angry about things from our past, we're maintaining anger. Again, it's a free country, and we don't have the ability yet, probably maybe coming, where people can read our thoughts. So, we're all free to think anything we want, right? We can be out here smiling and sitting looking very Buddhist. And inside, we can be just cultivating, ruminating about all kinds of garbage. And that's true. None of us know. There's no law against that. But there's a fundamental law of Dharma and causes and conditions. When we do that, we are sabotaging our desire to transform and heal. There's no law against it, but there is the law of karma. There is the law of causes and conditions. And we have to understand that our storehouse consciousness is the repository of everything that we think and say and do. Leaves the seeds. So you could be outwardly looking like an enlightened Buddha, but if in your mind you're cultivating anger and fear and patience, you're strengthening those formations, strengthening those seeds, and they'll get stronger, or they'll stay the same. So we have to understand that this is, if we really are serious about our wanting to transform, to be happier people, stabler people, kinder people, we really are committed to wanting to show up in the world, in our relationships, in a more wholesome way, you know, then this is the way. Yes, Bill.
Is it healthy to simply turn away, and particularly in regard to current politics?
This political thing is really hard for people. I get it. No, it's hard. Because I think for years now, I keep getting the same question. But that's fine. We need to look deeply at this. So just give me the question, because it was the first part before the politics. What would they say?
Is it healthy to simply turn away?
Simply turn away from what? From one's anger or from what? Yeah, again, when, you know, it's this, let's take what we've been taught today. So we come at life with a commitment and understanding that anger is an afflictive emotion. It is a poison. If we maintain it, it will make us sick. Anybody here who has spent any time in their life being angry for a while knows it is a poison. It will poison your mind and it will poison your relationships. Poison may be strong because you think it kills you. How about toxic? It is toxic. So internally, you know, our commitment is we understand that and we make a commitment we're not going to maintain it. So what do? When it arises, when we arise, we don't turn away from our anger. We hold it in awareness. And we look deeply into our own causes and conditions that are causing it to arise. You know, why do we get angry at the politics? Because I mean, you know, I get angry too. I don't get angry. I don't know what I do. I mean, it kind of disgusts me. A lot of what I say. But then I immediately say, but this is what is. These are who these people are. This is the product of causes and conditions. It's what's going on in politics is just causes and conditions. Individuals, their causes and conditions. A lot of these things are societal seeds. I mean, they're just, you know, it's just, it is what is. And it's sad. It's sad what people, how people are with each other on all sides. And then, you know, I remind myself it's just a product of causes and conditions. It cannot be in the moment other than it is. It has always been here. Self-interest, greed, indifference, anger, fear, you know, always been here. And, you know, speaking personally, you know, I do what I do to be of help. I make sure that I don't cultivate within myself anger and hatred, that I cultivate understanding and compassion. Right? And I do my best as an individual to help others. And I hope anybody who's listening to this is doing the same in their own way. So there's, I don't know, you know, there's no turning away. It's transforming. We don't need to turn away from the world just because it's not the way I want it to be. We turn actually, as bodhisattvas, we turn into the world. But we don't turn into the world as worldly people. With our self-righteousness, with our I'm right, you're wrong, I'm good, you're bad. I don't enter the world in anger. I don't enter the world in fear. I don't, you know, I enter the world with understanding and compassion. And try to be of help, try to do some good any way I can. I mean, when I say me, I mean all of us. There's no turning away. Bodhisattvas turn to the world. You know, don't turn into the world and jump right in if your mind's not clear. If you don't have any capacity for understanding or compassion, you'll just become part of the problem. That's why, you know, endless attempts to change the world. All good. I mean, it comes from a good place. But why doesn't it work? Because of the alaya, because of the storehouse consciousness. If this is not transformed and it's up here, it'll always keep coming back. Proverbial bad penny. Always showing up again. Anything else, Bill?
What if the other person is intentionally doing something to make you angry?
Well, I'm not sure how I would know somebody's intentionally making me angry. I mean, I'm not clear how that happens. I mean, there could be some people, as we used to say, yanking our chain. Is that what that would mean? Somebody's yanking our chain, isn't that? Yeah, so, don't take the bait, right? You know, it's only the stupid, impulsive fish that get caught. Right? There are fish down there. Right? They see the bait, but they don't bite right for it. They look, and they see that hook, or they see the line. I'm not gonna bite on this one. I mean, nobody can make us angry. I mean, the anger comes from us. Nobody makes us retort. Yeah, I don't know. If you get somebody in your life who goes out of the way to make you angry, you know, they're trying to help you. Trying to help you get rid of your anger. Now, again, I mean, if it happens now and then it's good for you. I mean, if this is somebody you're living with 24/7, it may get old after a while. You know, you may want to make some changes in the relationship, but... Yeah, you know, we've talked before, and Shanti Devi says, again, this is, you know, those people in our life who bring up aversion in us, if we are serious about transformation, they are helping us. They are providing us with the material. They're providing us with the opportunity of doing just what we said. Of not maintaining anger, of returning to my breath, and of looking deeply, generating understanding and compassion. It's people helping me practice. Where would I be without them? You know, the world is providing us that. I mean, you know, every time we look at the news, it's providing us an opportunity to look more deeply, causes and conditions. You know, we have this wonderful mind. It is capable of intelligence. You know, and has these tools, logic, analysis, deep looking. You know, it has wonderful capability, but we don't use it. So when we look at the world and what's going on in the world, we should use this mind of ours to understand it. Take advantage of the opportunity. If all we do is look at the news and get angry, and it always amazes me that people seem to do that all day. You know, they just look at them, they get up in the morning, they look at the news, they get angry, turn it on a couple hours angry later, get angry, you know. Check in a couple hours later, see if they can still be angry. Oh, they're still angry, you know. Next day, something else to be angry about, you know. I mean, after a while, you sort of get it. And then, as Shanti Davis says, we should move to do something. To heal this world, to make a better world, to create better relations with people, loving relations, harmonious relations, caring relations, understanding relations. If there are wounds in our relations with people, we should heal them. We shouldn't just let them fester. We should heal them. We should make amends if we have hurt other people, past and present. We want to heal. We don't want to be the cause of anger, cause of. Many of us have acted unskillfully. You know, I mean, we're very aware of other people's unskillfulness. We were always thinking about their unskillfulness. You know, some of us were recently in a 4-week. I taught Dharma Rakshita's "The Wheel of Sharp Weapons," very powerful text. But I mean, one of his major points was, you know, when anything negative happens to you, stop acting like you're an innocent. Have you ever, he said, ask yourself, have you ever at some point in your life done the same thing? You know, I mean, so even when we look at the things that might be bothering you in the national unfolding, is it, can I honestly say that I have never done something to protect my own self-interest, even at the expense of someone else? Have I never turned away from somebody's suffering? Have I never been indifferent? Have I never been callous? Have I never just thought of myself ahead of others? Have I ever been oblivious? Just following my own little path, my own, you know. Have I ever been self-righteous and thought that my ideas, my thoughts, my ideology is the right way and the only way? Right? So when you begin to reflect like that, you realize, yeah, I mean, you know, fortunately for most of us, you know, we weren't senators and representatives, you know, we couldn't do that much damage, you see. But, you know, a lot of what we see out there is, you know, just egoistic selves, just, you know, with power, so they can do more damage, right? It's sad. One more, Bill, if we have time, then. Anything a little different? About the pandemic. Okay, what about the pandemic? I thought it was over. Are you sure, Bill, that's the person hasn't been reading the paper? I thought it was just going to go away, no?
One question is about family members who refuse to wear a mask, how to kind of deal with that. And the other is someone who was unable to attend his uncle's funeral and wake due to the pandemic.
And what?
Uncle's funeral, who just passed, and wake, he could not attend.
Because?
And he's feeling anger because of the pandemic. And he's feeling anger in regard to that.
Yeah, so let's work backwards again. You know, the world is unfolding according to causes and conditions. Everything is impermanent. The pandemic is here, and I know people write different reasons, but we know it's here because of causes and conditions, right? Cause and condition have to do with viruses. Cause and conditions have to do with environmental changes. Causes and conditions, the way human beings respond to it. You know, here we are, right? And we, you know, to be angry, it's really the same thing we talk. You know, we need to look deeply into it and see everything is the product of causes and conditions. That is why the pandemic is here. That is why things have unfolded the way they have. And that is why, you know, many people, not just you, whoever it is, many people, you know, their loved ones are dying in the hospital and they can't go. People can't even visit people in the hospital, even if they don't have the virus these days, right? People can't visit their loved ones in who are sick in nursing homes because, I mean, it's you know, many, many people all around the world are having the same problem. We're in a pandemic, and it's very contagious. So again, understanding, and understand, you know, yeah, it is a certain degree of suffering not to be able to be with your family members and loved ones at this time. But this is the way it is. And I don't say that like indifference. It's like a deep acceptance. And what was the first part of that? Oh, I'm sorry.
Now, the other question, Fred, was how do we apply that to a life-threatening situation such as COVID-19? Let's say someone in your family does not want to use masks.
Oh, man, wear masks. Yeah. You know, I was thinking about the other day, somebody was asking me that. I thought, is there anybody who's listening to this call who doesn't remember being an adolescent and not following directions? I mean, has anybody thought, you know, that they knew better? Anybody snuck out at night? Anybody didn't follow the school rules? Anybody didn't, you know, do what their parents told them? Anybody remember that, right? And do you remember how we justified it? How do we justify it? You know, we either justified it with denying that the person who was setting the rules really knew what they were doing or were wrong, right? Or else, you know, basically thinking that we know better, right? Or else we couldn't care less, do whatever I want. I mean, you know, here it is, right? But again, you know, the problem we have today is that, you know, there are many, you know, all of us have our immaturities. All of us have our lack of development, all of our inability to critically think. You know, the problem we have now is that we have people in society in power who are, you know, strengthening those seeds. It's really about the seeds. It's about what's being cultivated, wholesome and unwholesome seeds. When you have wholesome seeds, when you have governments that cultivate wholesomeness in society, you know, we're all in this together. Let's take care of this. Let's all do this. Let's all do that. I know you don't want to, but we're all, you know, then as you can see in other countries, it works. You know, but unfortunately we have in our culture right now, you know, national leaders who are basically, you know, watering negative seeds, watering seeds of individualism, right? Watering seeds of constitutional rights. I mean, it's bizarre. But that's, you know, that's what is. And we have to look deeply and think, you know, this strain in America has always been here, right? I mean, we actually believed, you know, still people believe these days that because of the color of people's skins that somehow they're less than. I mean, you know, I mean, we believe all kinds of stuff, don't we? Irrational beliefs. So, I mean, this one doesn't surprise me. And on that cheery note, so let me just say again, please don't leave with this very rich discussion. I appreciate your questions. You know, this is a very anger, dissatisfaction, the mind of dissatisfaction, discontent. This is big. And it's really motivating a lot of the problems in society. So please do your best to understand it and make the commitment. Right? To give up anger. Give up impatience, give up annoyance. And take up the practice of love and compassion and understanding. I think we as individuals will be a lot happier and I think better for society.